There were two fishing cabins on the Deschutes River, nestled up against the Warm Springs Indian Reservation. Guido's family took a boat across the river and wheelbarrowed their provisions to their cabin. There were no roads on their side of the river, just miles of wilderness. The trails, mountains, canyons, draws, and creeks were part of their family mythology, a landscape both unknowable and intimate, like the river that flowed so full and strong even when they were not there, that changed every moment and changed not at all. And cradled in this rough creche, there were many ways to die. There were rattlesnakes coiled in the woodpile, scorpions sheltering under flat rocks, black widows spun into the corners of the boot room. None of them was as dangerous as the river itself. The river that had taken a beau of Guido's mother and a beloved cousin, swallowed them from sight, tugging them into the whirling currents and underwater vortices. The other cabin belonged to our family. My father and Guido's mother were siblings, and in summers, our families merged into one. There were five children in the Rahr family and three in ours. Clustered around the same age, we were knit close in that rugged country, playing games and making up stories that were too wild for most children. Guido was the oldest of our pack of first cousins, and the only one who moved through our dangerous kingdom as if he belonged there. He had a natural grace and assurance, and he rarely stepped wrong. As early as 7 years old, he would disappear for the day and rejoin us wordlessly, leaving us to wonder about the life he was leading and how different it was from ours. He had been born with a natural intelligence that gave him a power we all recognized. I tried to follow him. I was younger and a girl, but I was tough and I didn't complain. He tolerated me sometimes, only if I moved through the landscape as he did, mimicking his silent walk, my senses alert. I stood by as he divined where a blue racer lay resting in the shade of a sagebrush, or when he lifted a rock that harbored a scorpion. He was no more afraid of a rattlesnake than a mouse, and his quick hands could catch anything. He told me that even with his feet on the ground, he saw the earth from far above. I believed in some shamanistic way that he could. I believed that from his place in the sky, the stories of the land were apparent to him. Those of rock formations, springs, volcanoes, and landslides. And within these large stories were smaller ones, each as complex and complete as a miniature solar system. He could make me see these things, and so was a kind of god to me. I could not have guessed then how close we would one day be, nor indeed that it was even possible to be close to such a boy. I knew in a childlike way that Guido wasn't wired like most people, nor was I. Since infancy, I had experienced brain tremors when for intense moments I trembled and shook and was unable to communicate. The episodes were both frightening and mysterious, for no doctor could explain why they happened. The tremors temporarily severed my connection to the world around me and were terribly isolating. Guido was also isolated, but his was a strong isolation, and it was happy. Our slight maladaptations marked us as black sheep, the children the adults worried about most, the ones discussed in the hushed hours after dinner. But in those lonely, afflicted childhood years, Guido's contrariety was a gift to me. When I was with him, I lost track of time. His simple, focused world delivered me from the painful vicissitudes of my own. I didn't grasp then what an impossible child he was for his parents to raise, or how hurtful he was to the family he more or less ignored. My Aunt Lori later told me how she and Guido Sr. had struggled with a son who had no interest in learning what they had to teach him, or indeed what the wider world considered a conventional education.